This is Earl Speedo Carroll of the Cadillacs, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
The girl I love, she's going away. The girl I love, she's going to stay. I'll dream of her.
Somehow we made it through. And you could rely on dark clouds passing by. I remember when we were happy to pretend good times would never end. I can still recall the thrill of it all. Yes, I remember when. For us, there always seemed enough, and dreams were meant to be. But now they've gone away somehow and left us with old memories. Life comes and goes so fast. Visions of the past are in flowers in the spring, in songs we used to sing. I remember when. Thank you. in the spring, in songs we used to sing. I remember when. Yes, I remember when.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my pleasure to have as my guest R&B and doo-wop legend, original member of the Marcells, Mr. Walt Maddox. How you doing, Walt?
Fine, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing great. You've had a heck of a ride over the years, and, you know, of course, the Marcells are so respected. They were a very, very important group in the genre. And I take my hat off to you. I spent a lot of time on stage, but I'm also a big fan. You were born in Pittsburgh, right?
Right.
Actually, a place where so much talent came from. Let me ask you this. When you were younger, were you drawn towards the music?
Oh, yeah. I think every kid was part of a singing group that was on everybody's corner.
Yep.
We did a lot of things a cappella because we weren't advanced enough to have a band play for us.
Right, right. No, I understand that, too, but... As a young child, when did you realize at what age that you could really get up and really sing a good song?
Well, we had a little singing group, again, like most little fraternities in high school and junior high school. So
right.
At 13, I was part of a little singing group that made me feel like, but I wanted to be in the business part of show business.
Right, which is very interesting because, you know, here I am, you know, it's like, I'm a Jewish kid living on Long Island, and all of a sudden I found myself in high school really hanging much more with the Italian kids and the black kids. Why? Because they sang, and I was really drawn to it, and I knew I could sing. My parents gave me a couple of guitar lessons when I was a kid.
Okay.
And you know, and I was drawn to it, so I understand, you know, what you're saying. Were there people in your family that were musical?
No, as a matter of fact, I was discouraged to go into the music business because, again, back in those days, the stability was not there financially, and you weren't making no money that you could say, this is what I want to do for a career.
Yeah, no, I understand that, too. You know, of course, you know, my parents, you know, the choices. As a matter of fact, my father did tell me, I sang with a singing group when I was about 17, 18. We were signed to Relic Records. We did the best of a cappella albums and got signed by MGM. So I flunked out of my first year of college, and I said to my father, I want to record an album. He says, I have no money for that. He said, get your ass back in college. And I did, but I managed to do both. So here you are, and you're singing at a young age, but you're telling me that you wanted to get into the business end, which is really and truly, that's a pretty heady decision, you know, for a young guy to say, I want to figure out what makes all of this tick. You know?
Yeah, and again, music has been as much of a business for me as it has been an art. You know, I recorded other people a little tape recorder.
Right.
Nothing of any broadcast quality. And, of course, in those days, it was so expensive to go into the studio.
Oh, wow.
That, it was only everybody's dream to go in rather than have any knowledge as to what a record session was all about.
Yeah, well, I use as examples, you know, people like Lloyd Price who managed to realize that if he owned all the means of production, the record companies couldn't take it away. And then I look at Herman, you know, and Jimmy Merchant, and I say to myself, they got to have everything taken away from them. They're still working really hard, and it's been heartbreaking. Jimmy Keys from the Chords was a good friend of mine because I was a dean in the Bronx for 30 years, and I had his kids. And he always came and gave seminars and career day to tell about how tough the music business was and that the record companies made all the money and the performance, of course, didn't. So, you know, wanting to figure all of that out, you know, for a guy like Walt Maddox, you know, I mean, that's coming in like when you go to a dealership and I say, I want to buy the car from the manager, not the salesman, you know,
yeah.
I want to get in it ahead. So I guess the real first big endeavor were the Blenders.
Yeah, you know, I look back at those days now and laugh because we were in the record session, and Mercury Records signed us, and Smash was the first was the label that they put us on. But we went in, and so somebody called over the loudspeaker and said, you guys have got to change the name because there's a group out already called the Blenders.
Right.
And so we felt like, well, maybe then we could get a name that would be close enough that we wouldn't alienate about this 50 people who were fans at the time.
Right.
And so we said, well, we can't use the Blunders, and then we can't use the Blinders.
Right.
And so we came up with the Blanders was close, and then, you know, you look back now, it's like the Blanders, how bland can you get?
Right. And so you went out and sang under the name the Blanders, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. How much recording did you do with that group?
We only had one record session, and Bobby Shad, who was over at Mercury Records, and we had a disc jockey out of Pittsburgh who was the manager. The music business, to me personally, if you get a hit the first time out, then you might stick together for some length of time, but if the first record you do is a bomb,
right,
you kind of lose all confidence, and you got to be real determined to go past that.
Oh, I know. I had that experience with that one particular group, and we kind of had a few more sessions, and then we broke up after that, and I found here we are. You know, I was 17, 18 then. I'm 67 now, and I realized that one of the tunes that we cut is a Northern Soul hit, and it's worth about $300, and I don't have a copy. So, you know, everything came full circle except for us, you know.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny, you know.
Well, it was not the places to play. And again, I have some plackets, posters, and even for the Shower Star shows, there's like 20 groups on the show.
Right.
And you could get a ticket for $1.75.
Right.
You know, so, yeah. You know, now you do the math. You didn't do any math back in those days. And it's like, how in the world did everybody get paid out of $1.75? I'm talking about, you know, you had Clyde McFadder, the Drifters, you had Moon Glows, you had right. Domino, and all the donuts came out of $1.75. I think if reality, we probably would have changed our mind to another career after you did the arithmetic.
No, I understand, but you know, when you think about that now, you're still doing it. I'm still doing it in my small way. I mean, I'm still singing and going out and doing a track show, you know, for the baby boomers and all of that stuff. And, you know, the other part is once the performing part and the singing part gets into your blood, you know, that's the other part that, you know, it just makes you feel good creatively, you know, and that's another reason for doing it. Let's fast forward a bit. Of course, you know, I guess you were singing in the clubs and you were singing in the lounges, and I'm sure you were also doing a Walt Maddox solo thing previous to the Marcells, because you realized that you could go out there and be a solo performer as well.
Well, the thing that starts taking place, and I don't know if you experienced it, but the group, the Vlanders, one guy got married, another guy went off to school, and you know, so that, and then trying to find a new group, that became, you know, even more difficult, especially when you're replacing out four guys. There's five guys in the group, so you're replacing four guys, trying to find four guys.
Right.
And so I decided to pursue a solo career, and running into the Marcells up in New York, and so I hung out with them for a while.
Right.
I went over to the record company, and they were interested, but, you know, they weren't committing. Now, you got to remember, Colpix Records was actually a record company. It was for soundtracks.
Right.
It wasn't for commercial music at all as much as it was for soundtracks.
Right.
So the Blue Moon was a real novelty for them, and something that they had no knowledge of, to the point where they wanted to know, like, how should we now treat this group now that they have a hit? And one of the things now that is like, are you kidding me? The record company went and got an agency. And so it was like a mixed group, the Marcells originally.
Right.
And there were two white kids and there was three black kids. And so by mathematics, it was like, should we treat this like a pop group or a soul group?
Right.
Well, there's three black kids, so it must be a soul group. I mean, we should have never been with a soul label or a soul agency. And so then it was a matter of that, well, we want to take them slow. Well, the early days of show business, it was the unwritten law, 5 years is what it took to make a star.
Right.
So they went to the agency and said, well, we want to start these guys off slow because we want to build. And so it's like, well, how much money? Well, they said, well, we can get them out of coming out of the box for $1,100. I mean, think about it.
Right.
Five guys, $1,100.
Right.
And his record company said, nah, that's too much money. We got to slow down because we want to, like, really make stars out of these guys. And music changed because back in the day when it took 5 years to make a star, things were happening much slower than rock and roll, where overnight you became a star.
Right.
And overnight you became nobody.
I guess that's the flip side of that, you know, I'm sure. I just wonder if everybody knew, you know, the minute the Marcells went in and finished recording that. But I do understand it went down in one take, so, you know. And I know Freddie Johnson pretty well. You know, I don't think he could do it in one take now, but all that being said, that was such a unique record in so many different ways.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
It became the standard for a bass riff, you know. My wife, when I met her, I moved to Boca in the year 2000. I met my wife about 8 years ago, and I'm married for the last time, thank you, Lord. And when I walked into her house for the first time, she had a 57 Seberg jukebox filled with records. And I said, let's listen to it. She turned it on and she said, I'm going to punch in my favorite record. And what was it? It was Blue Moon by the Marcells. That's her favorite record.
Well, you know, the thing that was real unique, the guys had no experience in recording. And I was back in the Blue Moon with Nene Cornelius Hart singing lead and Fred singing bass. And their voices was just, I don't know how to put it. They carried so that, I mean, I don't have a loud voice. when I record, you turn the thing up about 9. When Nene recorded, you turned it on 1, and still he was taking the and peeking the needles. And the same thing with Fried. I mean, he's not the deepest voice in the world, but I stack him up against anybody for his ability to sing, and his voice just carries so well.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, his chops. And I heard that Blue Moon wasn't the first choice, that the bass riff was really for another tune. And then they said, well, give me a tune that you guys know. And they said, well, we know the lyrics to Blue Moon. And that's what happened.
Bomb, 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 dang, 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 ding, dong, ding, blue moon, moon, blue moon. Dip, 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 moon, 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 dip, dip, dip. Bomb, 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 dang, 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 ding, and on, ding, boom, 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 boom.
You saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart.
Bomb, dang, 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 ding, and on, ding, boom,
boom. You knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for.
Bomb, dang, 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 ding, dong, ding, boom. Bomb, 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 dang, 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 ding, dong, ding, boom. Bomb, 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 dang, 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 ding, dong, ding, bloom.
I don't know that they realized what they had at that moment.
No,
probably not. You know,
no.
It's, I mean, that's.
But again, there was a lot of work, but there was no money back in those days, and so the theaters is where we spent most of our time. But we knew he had bad management, and that was a thing that really, really hurt, because, instead of working, they had the number one record in the country and out of work. I mean, how do you have that number one record in the country and out of work? I mean, it was just a guy who, he meant well, he was a nice guy, but he didn't know show business and he didn't know anybody as far as in a business is a lot of who you know.
Oh. But for sure, I mean, you know, now it's changed so much that the lawyers are making all the deals, you know, and the lawyers are in control. I mean, it's all changed and whatever, you know, and they nail all of that stuff down before they even go into the studio. I mean,
right.
But, you know, you're right, you live and you learn, but, you know, as you have said to me, and we'll talk about that, you know, you became pretty much a student of the business, you know, so to speak, at that point. When you joined the Marcells, what were you thinking at that moment? I mean, when you went in there, Blue Moon had already been recorded when you joined?
Blue Moon, yes.
Yeah.
I joined the group 3 months after Blue Moon.
Ah. So you had heard it on the radio, and you knew. What were you thinking when they invited you into the group? Well, let me ask it a different way. How did you come to become a member of the Marcells?
Well, again, this country was not ready for a mixed group, and so on some of the tours that they did, when the tours went south and the Marcells had to get off the package. And so it can only last for so long before that becomes an issue. I never, to be very honest with you, never did find out the issues, all the issues that the guys had that, other than, again, it was just no work.
Right.
And consequently, I was traveling around New York and Sue said to me, if you join the group, I'll give you a deal, because they needed a group to start recording in a hurry, because they did, Blue Moon album was done so fast, but they needed another single out on the market.
Right.
Well, I went up to rehearsals, and they sent Blue Heartaches over.
Right.
And the guys, they all kind of ridiculed it, because the only thing was available was Ted Weems' version of Heartaches, and there was one more, but again, it was popular today. And so I took they had balled it up and threw it in the garbage, and I went in there, and I, for whatever the reason, and you look back and now, divine intervention, because I called Jules in the middle of the night, around 3 o'clock in the morning, and I said, Jules, I got the next hit record, which was Heartaches, and I did a vocal arranging on it, and,
right.
And we went into New York and recorded it, and,
wow.
And as far as that was concerned, that was the rest of history.
Watch out!
Here we go again.
Yep, whip,
Wow. And of course, the original bass line was followed, because, you know, when you're successful in with one thing, you try to come, you know, like from the same direction, which certainly made sense. And then, of course, Melancholy Baby. But the other thing that I wanted to mention, because, as I say, I'm also a fan, is the fact that the Marcells are remembered by many people as an up-tempo group, but they could sing a fabulous ballad.
Yes, yes.
Man, I mean, you know, and I can, and we could rattle off some of the ballads that you guys did, and we'll talk about one of them in particular, you know, in a little bit. But the Marcells were a group that could sing anything that you threw in front of them, because they had...
Well, a lot of people don't know it, but Blue Moon was the B-side of the record. Goodbye to Love was the A-side.
Well, that's the tune I wanted to talk about. That, believe it or not, you know, when you have fans of the music and they are not in the business and they're not singers, you know, they say, wow, I like that record. But Goodbye to Love... When we're all sitting around and you hear other groups talking about other groups, always Goodbye to Love comes up and says, man, what a damn good record. And you know that to be true.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, on the PBS special, they had the Chantels who had the original version of Goodbye to Love.
Uh-huh.
And so T.J. Lubinsky comes up with an idea Let's do a combination of Goodbye to Love with Chantels and the Marcells.
Wow.
So we go into the room, and the Chantels are looking like, who are these guys? And they knew nothing about our version of Goodbye to Love.
Really?
Blue Moon was such a dominant song.
Uh-huh.
And so Fritz said, well, you know, ours goes like this. And he's saying, so, you know, we wanted to go. And they're looking and saying, no. Ours goes like this, and we wanted to go. Well, we spent about 3 hours going back and forth trying to make a batch out of the song. And so it was like, you know what, I think we need to scrap this whole idea.
Well, you know what? It would have all you needed was for the Chantels to do their version and have the guys just play a little segue into the other beat. And, you know,
right, right.
You know, but exactly, hey, right. You know, who knows? But to me, it sounded like a good idea. I wish I had known that. You know, I'm pretty friendly with Lois Powell. And, you know, I'm going to lay that on her one of these days. Because you, hey, did that, tell me about that, you know.
Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye to love. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye to love.
Goodbye to love. Goodbye to kissing. Love is a school. Love is true, you were true. Goodbye to love. Something is missing. Each time you're near, you make it clear that we're through.
You're full of the town love. You're busy each time. The lips that were once mine.
Goodbye to love. I feel like crying. Someday there'll be someone for me. Somewhere is true,
but I love only you. Goodbye to love. Goodbye to kissing.
I guess you guys did it all. I guess you did the Brooklyn Fox and the Paramount and the Dick Clark show, you know, because, as a matter of fact, I remember seeing you guys, with Murray the K at the Brooklyn Fox.
Murray the K, right. Yeah, right. Exactly. And again, every city, for the most part, at least on the East Coast, had a theater. The Royal in Baltimore, the Regal in Chicago, Tivoli in Chicago,
right.
Chicago in. And we played, and I tell you, the theater chain is absolutely beautiful. The Fox chain of theaters are just out of this world.
Right. Well, you know, I went to LIU in Brooklyn, you know, when I went to college. I went there for a few years, and believe it or not, that's the old Paramount, and the basketball court is right where the stage used to be, and they still kept some of the seats.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They still kept some of that intact, you know. How was it working with Dick Clark?
Dick Clark was a lot of fun. He really was. As a matter of fact, and he got a great sense of humor. But we're doing the Dick Clark show, and Dick Clark asked NeNe a question that was rapid monthly. And when he got through, And he's looking at NeNe for an answer, and NeNe says, huh? And Dick thought he was burst out laughing because he said, you're missing a whale of a show.
Oh, that's pretty funny. Well, you know, I've heard all the Dick Clark stories. And, you know, I sang a little bit with the Mystics, you know, for a whole bunch of years and whatever. And, of course, I was not an original, you know. I'm only 67. I'm a baby, you know. So, you know, I did have a group called Harmony Street. We were three girls, two guys, and we did some shows with you guys, as a matter of fact, way back. We were from Danbury, Connecticut. We did everything but had a hit. We were the entertainment for Bill and Hillary at the 98 Christmas party at the White House, and we did a lot of good stuff. But we really came along a little bit too late, and I would say I was really... I'm happy to be a small grain of sand on a beautiful beach, you know, with a lot of, you know, to me, just being part of everything that happened, you know, and hearing some stuff back is like great. You know, talking about the South and all of that, you know, Mary Wilson told me a bunch of stories, and of course they all did, about not, and Herb Reed told me stories about, you know, we were on stage, but if we wanted to go around to the back and go sit in the audience side, they wouldn't let us sit there. That's how bad it was. We had to stay backstage and eating on the bus and all of that stuff. I'm wondering if you experienced any of that stuff even after you had joined.
Oh, yeah. And again, when you went south, but I remember one trip, we were in Canada. And from Canada, we went down to North Carolina.
Right.
And so we got down around Richmond, Virginia. We were working with Ernie Cato.
Oh.
And so the ad came on the radio, and again, back FM radio or AM radio, you know, it faded in and out when you were so far away, and the closer you got,
right,
the better the signal got.
Right.
Well, we heard the ad on the radio around Richmond that says, Greenville, this will be a white dance with colored spectators.
Oh.
And I was like,
wow.
What did he got just say?
That's like,
can you get that, see if you can get that station back again. Well, what happened was on Friday they would have white dancers with colored spectators.
Wow.
And Saturday they'd have colored dancers with the white spectators, but
wow,
it would be in a gymnasium, and so there would be a balcony, and the kids would dance up in the balcony, but they were not allowed down on the floor together.
Man, well, you know, it was a real breakthrough, you know, when Clay Cole started breaking the color line, and and when you know, American Bandstand did, and whatever. A very interesting commentary. I was talking to Len Barry, and Len, you know, it could be pretty controversial, and he said something to the effect of, well, you know, it was, you know, as far as having, you know, white and black kids mixed and this and that and whatever. And somebody said, he says, and then somebody said to me, but you didn't see any white kids on Soul Train, like one or two. And he said, yeah, well, I don't know, you know, but really and truly, you see, me, it was always about the music. So I didn't care.
Yeah.
I didn't care who was singing in front of me, man, as long as long as the blend was good, you know.
Well, we were experiencing also, Blue Moon was the big one, needless to say, but Heartaches was second to that, but it was came in around half of what Blue Moon sold, and then My Melancholy Baby came in with half of what Heartaches sold, and so we could see a trend. Well, and I didn't realize it, but Billy Don Smith wrote a song, Friendly Loans.
Uh-huh.
Man, when I heard this song, I just knew this was going to be the biggest thing, even maybe bigger than Blue Moon.
Right.
And are you familiar with the song at all?
Yes.
We sold about 3,000 records the first week and didn't sell a record after that. And that was one of the strangest records that I've ever experienced.
Go, 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 hurry, 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 get, I get over to Friendly Loan. We want to see you at Friendly Loan, that neighborly low-cost, long-term, uptown, no-down payment company.
My baby said she'd marry me, but there was just one thing.
What?
I had to go and buy her a great big diamond ring. I didn't have no money, I didn't know where to go, until I heard that fella say on the radio,
I get
I get over to Friendly Loan. Hurry over to Friendly Loan. All you have to do is sign on the dotted line, and the money is there, and the treatment is fine at Friendly Loan. We want to see you at Friendly Loan. That neighborly low-cost law firm, uptown, no-down payment company.
Well, after we both said I do, we had to move somewhere. Found us an apartment, but oh my, it was bare. Didn't have no money to fix the place up nice. Then I recalled that friendly voice with that good advice.
I I get over to Friendly Loan. Hurry over to Friendly Loan. That neighborly low-cost law firm, uptown, no-down payment company.
Well, everything was wonderful until that fatal day.
Bad
I couldn't
day.
Keep my payments up, so in a friendly way,
they
repossessed my sofa, the rugs up off the floor. And I could hear that radio as it went out the door.
Go, 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 hurry, 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 get over to Friendly Loan. Hurry over to Friendly Loan. That neighborly low-cost law firm, uptown, no-down payment a company. Low-cost law firm, uptown, no-down payment a company. Low-cost law firm, uptown, no-down.
You know, it's funny whether you have a tune that you put out, or you open a restaurant, or you do, no matter what you do, there's no way to figure out what people are going to do.
No.
You know, as far as buying a record, going to eat at a restaurant, going to a club, it's just, you know, it's just amazing. I guess that's the mystery of this business.
Yeah, and the other thing was we had a resentment, and I use that word instead of hate, we had a resentment to the English invasion.
Oh,
and I look
sure.
back now and I can understand what the people who had a lot of money, because even today, if for the groups that came after the English invasion, they make one amount of money, and the groups that came before the English invasion, they make another amount of money.
Right.
And that's because the English invasion went to facilities that had 20,000 seats.
Right.
And for us that came before the Beatles, we were working the Apollo theaters and places like that. So
right.
there was no way you could justify putting a group from the 50s and early 60s into a stadium, because he just didn't have the drawing power.
Right.
And it wasn't marketed the same as they marketed the English invasion.
No, I understand. I mean, you know, you can count on one hand the groups that even managed to have anything in the top 10 after the Beatles came in. You know, it was Jane the Americans, the Beach Boys, and, you know.
The Vogues were one of them.
I want to run something past you, and this is something that I was told, and now I can verify it. Bobby Kretschmar, do you know who that is? He has Starlight Records. And the Mars, they do Starlight Discs, they do only a cappella.
Okay.
And the Marcells did some cuts. This was something that Bobby told me, because we were on Starlight as well. He says, I'm going to tell you a story about the Marcells on Starlight, because they did a few cuts. Supposedly, you guys did Blue Moon a cappella and some other stuff, which is out on Starlight. And he said when it came to the end of the tune and the Marcells finished the cut, he said, where's the false part at the end? And they said, we're not going to do it, or we're not doing it, or for some reason we're not doing it. And there was a whole, like, two-hour discussion about why and what, and we're not going to do it, and I want you to do it, and whatever, whatever. Do you remember that? Do you remember anything like that?
No. No, you got to remember, there was a time that there was two groups of Marcells.
Ah.
And so we were the group that worked, for the most part, nationally, and the other group kind of worked locally. That's what happened. I do remember that Fred, and he took some guys, and they did an acapella.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
Well, there was a guy that came along, and he was wanting to be the manager. He also wanted to be a singer.
Oh, okay.
And so he got the original guys to start a group back again, the Marcells. And but they didn't work good. But the places they worked were like VFWs and Elks and places like that.
Gotcha.
And I wasn't interested in doing that. So they would say to him, you know, Walt's getting all the good jobs and we getting none, and we got the original guys. And so that pissed him off to the point where then he tried to sue me.
I got
so he went to like a little local magistrate and. He filed papers against me.
Right.
Well, yeah, I looked at it like a joke. I mean, this guy, and of course, back in those days, there was no contract like groups. I mean, we just started singing, and somebody wanted to quit.
Right.
They quit. I mean, there wasn't enough work out here to argue about it. Well,
right.
So what happens, this guy goes to get an attorney to sue us, and I carry insurance because of... It's just, this is a business and you need it. And people say, here's the Marcells, they got a lot of money, so let's sue them. Well, my attorney gets up in front of the judge and he says, look, Your Honor, do not mention when we come up before you there's insurance, because the minute you do that, there's going to be a big lawsuit. The judge says, I disagree with you. When they see that there's an insurance company they're up against, they're going to back down and this thing will be squashed.
Right.
Well, since 1961, I'm the only person that signed contracts.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when we worked, I signed the contract. Whatever happened. So I was like, okay, well, then we'll turn over to the insurance company. Well, the insurance company says we'll pay to defend him. And so when we went in front of the judge, what the judge said, his insurance antennas went up. It's like, whoa, this is a lot of money, because we're carrying $1 million worth of insurance.
Right.
Well, when the judge said there's insurance, all of a sudden a case that was about nothing became a case about insurance.
Uh-huh.
And so for 3 years, to make a long story short, for 3 years it almost had $1 million worth of legal fees.
Wow.
I tell people up front, I did not win it, but we settled out of court.
Uh-huh.
And right now, that for that reason, Fred's not allowed to use the name. The Marcells, he can't say formally the Marcells, but we still get along, and all the guys, I mean, it was like, hey, I don't hate you guys, you did what you had to do to try to make some money. And Fred, we use him occasionally.
Right.
But, you know, I think the thing that you realize, if you quit singing in 1960, it could be 2015 when you go back on stage again. It's still 1960.
Oh, yeah.
And so what has happened over the course of years, the group now is probably the most, if one of the most, if not the most exciting group on the circuit.
Right.
And when we use Fred, it's like, okay, Fred, just stand over here so you don't get in the way, because the guys, you know, they just, it's such an energetic group, and it's such a great group. I think last year we worked 45 dates out of 52 weeks.
Wow, wow. But, you know, but then again, you know, Freddie is Freddie. To be honest, I remember Freddie was calling me at one point 10 years ago saying, hey, would you mind if I tagged along with the Mystics and sang bass? I mean, seriously, you know, he was calling us and saying, hey, man, I just want to get out there, because I don't think he was doing much at that time.
And he
wanted to work, you know. And I said, and I said to him, I don't think the Mystics have any tunes that go Blue Moon.
No.
You know, unless.
Yeah, absolutely right. But again, now this, we're doing a date in August, and the guy wants his friend to sing Blue Moon. So
right.
It's like, well, come on, friend, sing Blue Moon. And yeah. After that, he goes back and sits down and enjoys the night. But, it was something that he realizes now when he gets on stage with the guys, because they're doing spins, and one guy, 70 years old, is still doing a split.
Right.
You know, so, you know, trying to keep up with them and not look out of place is very difficult.
Now, I hear you. Let's go in another direction right now. Let's talk about the fact that you do a heck of a Nat King Cole, and your Nat King Cole tribute is really something to be reckoned with. How did you get into that? Was it just that people told you that you sounded like Nat?
Yeah, as a young performer, as a matter of fact, I got a pick out of Record World and I believe Billboard. I was on Calico Records.
Right.
Along with the Skyliners.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so my first song was called Would I? Uh-huh. And the reviews came back, I young that sound. And so for the longest time as a lounge act, I wouldn't sing any Nat King Cole songs because I felt like if I sing some songs that you don't relate to that, well, you can still come and see me sing. Yeah. And so for that reason, I wouldn't do it. And then in 1970, I noticed music by Nat King Cole was starting to disappear. So I did a tribute to Nat Cole in 1978.
Uh-huh.
For the first time with a symphony orchestra in Hines Hall. And we had 40 members of the symphony. And I started to do a tribute to that from that point on. I really, to be honest, it was a show that had the potential to go to Broadway. I just didn't have the connections to be able to pull it off.
Yeah.
And I found out music is very specialized. You know, I thought music was music. But, man, like, music is not music. And promoters that get into rock and roll, they don't know the first thing about a promoter in classical music. And country music is the same thing. They don't know anybody. So that my contacts were with rock and roll music. And I got... Even Richard Ader, I was trying to get him to help me out, but
right.
He didn't have any contacts. I mean, that was when I realized,
yeah.
Wow, this is a specialized field. I still do it occasionally when the guys aren't working.
To be with you, or would I swim the ocean blue? Would I do these things if I could, my darling? You know I would. Would outer space be too much to conquer for your gentle touch? Would I do these things if I could, my darling? You know I would. The mountains would not be too much for me, nor would the ocean and the sea. You know I'd cross the great divide if you were only at my side. Would I love you if you were mine? And would I cherish you, my divine? All these things I would do if I could spend my life with you. Would I love you if you were mine? And would I cherish you, my divine? All these things I would do if I could spend my life with you.
Well, you know, it's very cool because, you know, I see you as a tenor that could be very easily mistaken for a baritone on certain days. So you can do the baritone thing because you have that quality in your voice. But basically, I think you're really a tenor.
Yeah, I'm someplace in them. And on the reviews, I was always a cross between Mathis and Nat Cole.
Well, you know, it's funny that you brought that up because I know Johnny and... I did a big interview with Johnny Mathis last year, and I said to him, you are the tenor version of Nat King Cole. And he said, you know, I've only been told that 3 or 4 times in my life. He said, but I guess so. Because if you take the quality of the voice from Nat and you bring it up to the tenor range, the quality is almost the same.
Yeah.
And having you say that, you know, I said, you're just confirming my thoughts. I remember hearing about Nat King Cole, that he would play the piano in the lounge with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. And somebody said to him one day in his late 20s, you know what? You play beautifully. Did you ever try singing some of these songs? And he did. And all of a sudden, the whole world got down on their hands and knees and said, oh, my goodness, what do we have here?
You know? Well, I did get a chance to meet and work with Freddie Cole.
Uh-huh.
And Freddie Cole sounds exactly like Nat in his earlier years.
Wow.
But we did the Joe Franklin show together.
Oh, I've been on Joe Franklin. You had the messiest office in the world. Channel 9.
Yeah. So, and I have talked to Freddie from time to time.
Uh-huh.
He's still down in Atlanta.
Wow.
I never met Ike, but I did meet Natalie.
Uh-huh.
And it was at the beginning of her career. And Channel 4 in Pittsburgh wanted to maybe do a special on Nat and Natalie, and her agency would have no part in that. I have taken this thing. I went to see Nat. I met him once in my life.
Uh-huh.
And if somebody had written this script in a movie, it would be, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Well, Joe Zito, do you know who that was?
Oh, yeah, okay.
And he ended up being Nat King Cole's music director.
Ah.
Well, I'm in a facility, the Civic Arena in Pittsburgh.
Right.
It holds 14,000 people.
Uh-huh.
Out of 14,000 people, I got a complimentary ticket for the first row in the place.
Wow.
Now, first of all, you know, we see wrestling matches where there's one chair sitting there at the ringside that the guy can grab. Well, I'm saying out of 14,000 people, I get a free ticket. And the free ticket is for the first row of the concert.
Wow.
So at the end of the show, Nat King Cole introduced his entourage, and he said, my music director, Mr. Joe Zito.
Right.
And Joe turned around and took a bow. And when he got straightened up, he looked up and saw me in the first row, and he said, right from the stage, he said, what the hell are you doing sitting out there? Come on up. So after the show was over, I went up, and then Nat came down while they were breaking up. And I got a chance to meet him, and just an immaculate man. Well,
yeah.
There was a party to be held at the Hilton Hotel in Pittsburgh, and Ike Jones was his road manager, and he came down. He said, Ike, Nat's not feeling well. The party had been called off. Well, he played Pittsburgh, and from Pittsburgh he went to San Francisco, and from San Francisco he was to go to Broadway. Joe said they just were exhausted because they just finished working 102 weeks out of 104.
Wow.
Nat was such a perfectionist. He never played Broadway in his life.
Wow.
And that was his opportunity to go to Broadway, and he missed it because of cancer.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I know that. That's amazing. Here's a tune. I don't know whether Nat ever recorded this tune, but I know Billy Eckstein did, and I sing it once in a while. You know the tune You've Changed? That'd be a great tune for you to record.
Yeah, you're not the angel I want to be.
No need to tell me that we're through.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's, I hear you doing that tune.
Oh, all right.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah.
No, that's
let's do it.
It's, you know, what's funny is that those tunes were so great, you know. I live in a, you know, when you're in Florida and you live amongst the baby boomers, I mean, you know, they just can't get enough of it. It's like giving them ice cream, you know, with sprinkles on it and everything. It's they just want to consume it all. They want to hear the doo-wop hits. They want to hear the 40s stuff. They want to hear the stuff that got them there, you know. You know how it is when you get on stage.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, I'll get your address, but I've taken the tribute to Nat to use dancers.
Uh-huh.
I'm using rear screen projection, and when I went to see Nat, he was using rear screen projection. I want to use it a lot more because he just used it. The change sceneries, I've taken it to DVD magnitude, but when you're doing Ramblin' Rose, the words come up on the screen and you sing along. But,
right.
Mona Lisa, you use this Mona Lisa as a backdrop. But again, it's a show that your life flashes in front of you if you live through the years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, and the people really crave it. You know, along with that, and I've noticed, especially with a Blue Moon tune, you get up on stage and you're doing an oldie show and whatever, and the aficionados who are sitting, you know, who buy the VIP seats and all of that, they're sitting there. Yeah. They hang on. They want it so authentic that you put one bump extra in, and and you say, they'll argue with you, it goes fadanga dang dang, it doesn't go fadanga dang, and you know, because they want it exactly the way they remember it. I'm sure you go, I'm sure you go through that sometimes. They say, we want it as authentic as we can get it.
Well, with Nat Cole, and I said though, if Nat were alive, he would probably have updated some of his charts that he wouldn't be singing them all, because there's just so many ballads. And so I took liberties to do Darling Jebozane Baku, and I took it to maybe kind of a Latin feel on it. Well, somebody was reviewing the show, and they called me on the carpet for changing the tempo to the song. Like, wow, it's hard to win here.
To the ends of the earth I'll follow my star, to the ends of the earth, just to be where you are. No matter where you roam, I'll never be far behind. Who cares where that path may wind? L is for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see.
Thank you and welcome to the show. Tonight we'd like to pay tribute to what I feel has to be one of the finest entertainers of all time. We'd like to go back to about 1943 when it was the Nat Cole Trio, all the way to 1965, Nat King Cole, Superstar. The first song that Nat recorded with a full orchestra was the Christmas song. However, he was warned that if he continued, he would lose his identity. Finally, with quite a bit of persuasion on his part, he got Capitol Records to record this song.
There was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far, very far over land and sea.
Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you. You're so like the lady with a mystic smile. They try to tell us we're too young to really be in love. Unforgettable, that's what you are. Gee, but it's great after being out late, walking my baby back home. Arm in arm over meadow and farm, walking my baby back home. Pretend you're happy when you're blue. It isn't very hard to do. You must know I've been true. Won't you say that we could start anew? In my sorrow now I turn to you. Please answer me, my love.
By 1962, record sales for Nat King Cole had fallen to about 250,000 units. So being influenced by his good friend Ray Charles, he recorded his biggest record ever.
Why I love you, no one knows. this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
Well, this concludes our tribute to Nat King Cole for the evening. I only hope you enjoyed him as much as I enjoyed singing for you. On behalf of everyone here, I'd like to thank Nat for so many years of music that we built our love lives around. That the impact that it had on our life, that with each song we can remember very vividly exactly what we were doing at that point in time in our life. When you could holler at the neighbor's kids, when you could holler at your kids, when they would threaten to fail a kid from school if he didn't do his homework and he didn't get a passing grade. And he would do it too. But you could buy a pack of bubble gum for a penny. And you could buy a quart of milk for about 25 cents. Those were the good old days. So, in closing, if Nat's listening, I'd like to say to him, your voice, the touch of your hand, I just long to know that you understand, my buddy, your buddy, misses you.
Let's swing over to something else, and let's swing over to Walt Maddox and the fact that you were working in a lot of schools doing school assembly programs with the Wake Up Your Dreams program. And, of course, I was a dean in a junior high school in the Bronx, tough school, so I can understand that. And I applaud you for doing that. Can you tell me something about Wake Up Your Dreams?
Well, it all started, again, I had no background in sociology and school teachers, and
right.
I got some great letters from teachers as well as kids, but I've been halfway around the world singing and talking to kids, but it all starts with a dream. Every successful person, every successful business starts with a dream.
Right.
I was over at a school, and they called me to go to a school in McKeesport here in Pittsburgh area, and they said that the kids didn't want to go to school. And I thought, there's got to be a problem why the kids didn't want to go to school. But for this to be a family problem is one thing, but to be a neighborhood community problem was another. Well, it seemed that there was so much drug abuse, unemployment, domestic abuse. The kids were afraid that if they went to school, the parents would be at home when they got through. It's like, wow, how do I deal with this? And so to get the kids to come back to school, I went over to school and I said, let's do an assembly program. I said,
right.
Whatever you want to do, let's go for it. And the kids were like, okay, right. I said, whoa, wait a minute. If you don't come to school for the next 2 weeks, you can't participate.
Uh-huh.
And the kids, they wanted to stay not only after class, they wanted to stay after school and work on their little choreography. I mean, whatever they wanted to do, this was their opportunity to show this stuff. Well, seemed at that turned the school around, that I start saying to the kids, it all starts with a dream.
Right.
Well, the following year, the more I talked to kids, regardless of the age and regardless of the income, there was a lot of kids that you say to them, what are you going to do when you come out of school?
Uh-huh.
Too many times the kids would say, I don't know.
All the time.
So I said, every kid's got a dream and they're sleeping someplace.
Right.
Well, I probably sang and talked to over 500,000 kids. And I see some of the kids now, because I would go into the schools and I'd say, I auditioned every singer in this entire community, and this is the best singers I could find.
Wow.
And I would get the principal and three of the faculty to come up on stage and sing Blue Moon.
Very cool.
That is hilarious. But
yeah.
The message was, again, there are times when you have to step out of your comfort zone.
Oh, yeah.
I got a letter from the lady in Boca. I went down and did the program, and she wanted to know if I wanted a job at the school. I was like, whoa, wait a minute. What is my curriculum? But that was how I was able to work with Christina.
Right.
I have a girl now that's on Broadway with the Jersey Boys.
Well, when you say Christina, why don't you be more definite about that?
Aguilera.
Right. Okay, tell me about that.
Well, she was over the guys, and so we would go around in the Marcells, and we would do the tributes and that, and we would do Christina, and she would just bring down the house. It's this little kid that weighed probably 80 pounds. I don't think she weighed more than that.
Wow.
I mean, people just, you know, I know Bruce Kyden, I don't know if these names mean anything, but they have a Dapper Dan dinner in Pittsburgh. And so they called me to do a Wind Beneath My Wings, and that was one number that just a little kid nailed it.
Right.
And so I said, Bruce, I got this. He said, no, we don't want any of the kids on this. We want you to do this. I said, I'll tell you what. We'll let her sing a verse, and I'll sing a verse. He said, okay, I can live with that. Well, again, there was 1,000 people there, and they could not stop applauding for this little kid who nailed this tune. So afterwards, they had the Penguins up at the hotel, and the Pirates were there, and the Steelers were there, and everybody's there, and they're coming over to one by one saying, we want you to sing the national anthem for them. And I said, wait a minute, guys, I'm the good guy that brought you to the dance. Nobody was asking me to sing anything. I was a fan of singing the national anthem. That's a difficult song to sing anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that was how the... For 5 years, she would travel around with me and open up the shows.
Wow. And I'll tell you, though, that's a great story. It's too bad that she didn't amount to anything, you know?
Well, this kid, I think on The Voice, I thought she was getting $10 million a year.
Wow.
I think I could budget that in after a while.
Yeah. That just triggered something in my mind. What is Walt Maddox's opinion of American Idol and The Voice? How do you feel about those programs? What's your take on
that? I think it's very unfortunate, to be very honest with you, because the kids today, they don't relate to work to get to be successful in show business.
Uh-huh.
To them, to be successful, you got to get on one of the talent shows. And even with them, you say, tell me who won American Idol 2 years ago.
Right, I hear you.
You know, I mean, there's just no staying power, but they don't realize it's not about the artist, it's not about the talent, it's about the show.
Oh, it's a reality show.
Right, right.
Hey, listen, Jennifer Lopez went to my school in the eighth grade. I had her for 1 year in between Catholic school and Preston Academy, and she was just Jen Lopez student at that point.
Okay.
She, you know, so I mean, I guess everybody goes their way, but that's about the way I feel about it. You know, we need to remember that it is a reality show, and it's all, and they're making a lot of money. You know, the same thing, in the same vein, I wanted to say this too. Today, with the doo-wop shows and all of that, because I produced a few of them and I've sung and I've done it from every angle. And I find that nowadays there are an awful lot of people putting on doo-wop shows that are doing nothing more than exploiting people that have been icons over the years And some of them are exploiting these people and just making money on them and working them like heck and not paying them what they deserve and all of that. What's your thought about that?
Well, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I know, because...
that's a real tough one. I think the thing that, again, that's unfortunate, the mentality of these acts that were back in the 60s and 50s, it's still there. And again, you know, we're looking at record companies now with a 360-degree deal, and these guys today don't have a clue what the 360-degree deal is.
Right.
I think they don't realize if you invest nothing, you can't get anything back.
Right.
You know, so that for you to say that in a business, and we have to keep remembering, this is a business, not an art.
Right.
Because for so long, everybody from the 50s and 60s, this was an art.
Right.
And they look back now and say they just, you know, how they get robbed.
Right.
And I'm not one that looks at it, I guess, that same way, only because I've been on both ends of it.
Right.
And so, you know, as a promoter that lost money last week, is he then supposed to say, well, then I made money this week, so I'm going to split it with all the acts.
Right.
It's a hard, hard, cold business.
Oh, it really is, because, like, I've been on both sides, too. I mean, you know, Joe Foster had called me and said, why don't you try to catch Walt Maddox before he does the Harvey Robbins show in Carl Springs? And I said, you know, I don't know if we're going to make it work, only because everybody's so busy. Now, it's funny because we used to work for Harvey up in Boston and all of that stuff, and yada, yada, yada. I said to Harvey one show, he comes into the dressing room and he says, okay, I'm cutting everybody two tunes. And he says, I'm cutting the Mystics, this tune and that tune. I says, look, why don't you just leave it to the groups what tunes they want to cut? So I'm cutting this tune and this tune. I says, Harvey, look, these are my two tunes. I have friends that I haven't seen from junior high school come from Westchester up to Foxwoods to hear me. I says, let throw back in one of my tunes or whatever. Nope, it's my show, da, da, da. Why is he putting in? Because his band likes to do an hour and 15 minutes in the middle of the show, and he wanted to try out and do a couple of tunes that they were working on. And I said to him, I got so mad at him, I tore off a check, and I said, how much is the show? I'll buy it from you. and he says to me, does that mean at the end of the show, when I do the dance, you're not going to reach down and pull me back up? Because when we did the show, he says, I was always the one that he picked because I could dance a little, whatever, you know. And I got so mad at him. But the next time we did a show with him, he was so nice to me. It was like he wanted to buy my wife and I dinner and whatever, whatever. So 2 years ago when he came to the Carl Springs show, he called me up and he says, can you do some radio promo for me for the show? I said, sure, because I do it for everybody else, you know. I said, sure, I can. I says, do you think you have a ticket for myself and Paulette? He says, oh, no, I can't do that. I said, some things never change.
And I'm laughing because you have to experience him doing Shout. And he said to the guys, which one are you going to pick me up? And they're like, I ain't picking you up. They're like, I ain't picking you up.
No, no.
And so he had to find somebody else to pick him up. But yeah, he's a character.
Yeah,
he is a character.
Well, I can only explain him in one way. He's Javi. It's Javi. Javi is Javi, you know.
Anyway, you can go on with stories all night, than the next.
No, I know, but I thought you might get a kick out of that. So, being a Pittsburgh guy, Joe Rock, what was Joe Rock all about? I'm sure you were in contact with him and Jimmy Beaumont.
Oh yeah, well, Joe was Mr. Sarcasm, but yeah. I used to tell him he took stars and made nobodies out of them.
Yeah, right, you know. So now, still working with the Marcells and doing what you're doing, you're still searching for new talent.
But not as much as I used to, only because, I mean, what do you do with them? You know, I mean, if you could figure out something to do, and that was, like, I guess, so rewarding when the years gone by that, man, like, you found a new kid that was so talented, and you took him in, you recorded him, and you shopped the records around to record companies.
Right.
You know, it's a very depressing time of...
Well, plus the business has changed so much. I mean, you know, and they, you know, you get to these big entities, they want to take it all away from you just the way they did, you know, in the old days. Now, you still have the Super M label?
I haven't, but again, these things are just kind of sitting there, but not really actively looking for it. Because, like I said, you don't, and now we've come all the way to the point where people hear the stories that they got robbed, this person got robbed. There's a little girl that, I recorded her and I sat down with her mom, and she was a single parent mom, and I said, look, I'm going to record this kid, but I'm going to let you know now, the record contracts read such that until the initial investment gets paid back, there's nobody that makes any money. And trying to explain to her, so she acted like she understood everything I was saying. So I recorded her. Well, about a week later, her daughter calls me and said she wanted some of her money.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, first of all, you know, we're talking about, you know, something that you got really early periods. She could understand none of that. At this point now, she just feels like, man, the record's out, it's selling, and I should be making some money.
Right. No, well, you know, it's funny. I mean, coming from another perspective, I talk to Lenny Welch all the time, and he says, I will never go back into the studio. I just want to sing my songs, and because I want to be creative and I enjoy doing it, whatever. His buddy, Mel Carter, is in the studio all the time saying, I want to keep recording, man. I want to keep being creative. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. You know, what do? You put it on YouTube, you put it on iTunes. I mean, you know, it's like, what do you do with a record? Nobody knows, you know.
Well, you said that, and I ran into Lenny in Pittsburgh, and we were on the same show.
Uh-huh.
And I said, Lenny, well, what happened is the kid in California that used to be my music director, and he wrote some songs, and one of them sounded like it was meant for Lenny Welch.
Uh-huh.
And I said, Lenny, I decided, I'm not interested in going back in the studio no more.
Yep.
I'm tired of the whole thing. I don't want to be bothered. So I said, well, look, I don't care, but I'll send you the tune anyway.
Uh-huh.
He calls me back the minute he gets the tune. He said, man, where'd you get that song from? Uh-huh. That's me.
Cool.
I said, I told you that. The guy had you in mind when he wrote the song. He said, man, you got to give me that tune.
Wow.
Hi, this is Lenny Welch, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
But anyway, if you run into Lenny Welch, ask him about this tune that I had him listen to.
Okay, because I talk to him. He calls me all the time. He said to me the other day, if I move to Florida, where should I move? I said, we'll talk about it. Yeah, we talk all the time. It's just amazing. So you have your latest CD is Walt Maddox sings The Favorites and More. I guess you got to watch out for the more part.
Well, again, I went through the period of time when I did not want to say anything but Nat King Cole.
Uh-huh.
And so as people came into the club, and have you got a copy of that?
I do not, as a matter of fact.
Well, it's an incredible CD.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. Some of the songs were... There's a song written by a girl named, and I found out it was a girl because her name is Leslie, and that could be a girl or a guy.
Right.
But Leslie Pearl is the name of this girl that's a songwriter. I tell you what, I would love to meet her one day.
Uh-huh.
Her lyrics are just, she got a song called It Was Time For You To Leave Me That'll Tear You Apart.
Right. Well, you know, first of all, I wish I had thought of Let's Go To Bed Early and Stay Up All Night. I wish I had thought of that. I've done it, but...
that's a girl's tune now.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But again, that was part of that same CD.
Yeah, no, I know about the CD. I just don't have it in my collection. Send in the Clowns was on that as well.
Oh, yeah. Incredible. Yeah. And the guy that did my charts, he ended up drinking himself to death. And boy, he was so talented. When you get it and listen to the arrangements, which is another thing that's lost today. There's no arrangements. You just sit down, you lay a pad down, and you lay down some synthesizer parts,
right?
And that's a record.
No, I understand. And, you know, you can overdub anything you want. I mean, you know, Walt Maddox could be your group tomorrow. All you got to do is put the time in. Tell me about Richie Merritt.
Richie was with me for, I can't remember how many years. And it just became impossible from the standpoint of financially
right.
flights. I mean, flights were costing sometimes I paid as much as $450 for a flight.
Yeah.
And it just becomes costly.
Yeah, because I've done a lot of work with Richie. I mean, Richie's like Mr. Florida. You know, he's everywhere. As a matter of fact, we sang together, I think, 2 years ago. We backed up J.T. Carter for a couple of shows. Yeah.
Okay, that's one of the Chris?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It was but Barry Newman and I were partners in that particular show, and we backed up J.T. Carter for.
Do you promote shows anymore?
When I have the time, because I'm doing the radio show. As a matter of fact, we're going to Portugal in a day or two for a couple of weeks, and then you know, I'm doing different things. But
I'm in Florida on the 24th of October.
Where
are you
going?
And I got the 25th on, but the 24th is a Friday. So if you know anybody looking for
some more another show,
the 25th of October.
Where are you working in October?
Sarasota.
Now let me ask you something. The movies that the Marcells were in, something about.
Well, we did
Twist Around the Clock. Yeah, that was right.
That was the only movie. Clay Cole Ray and Vicki Spencer and Dion.
Yeah. Clay was a good friend of mine. You know, when Clay Cole had a place called The World in Roosevelt Field, you know, during the late 60s, it was Clay Cole's World. And I was introduced by Clay Cole, you know, when I was a kid, whatever. And here we go, like 40 some odd years later, I was in a show just before, you know, Clay passed away, whatever. We had him as the MC. I says, here you are introducing me on stage all those years later. For me, that was a really good thing because Clay was a good guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Hi, this is Clay Cole. You're on the Harmony Street Show with my good friend, Mike Miller.
And I got to meet High Lip in Philly, and that was with the Blenders.
Oh,
so
well,
that was back to the mid-50s.
Yeah. What about Jerry Blabbitt? He was a Pennsylvania.
You know, when and I'll call Jerry, and he'll say, hey, baby brother, you know, he's like so cool. And I was like, but when are you going to put the Marcells on the show? You know, it's the next show I got coming up. I want you guys to be on it. Well, needlessly, we haven't been on the show yet.
Yeah,
I'll call him periodically, and I know we just played the Gold Nugget. And he does Thursday night at the Gold Nugget with his radio show.
Right. Well, he comes down here sometimes, too.
They call me the big boss to the big cat sauce, and you're on the go with one of the hottest radio shows in town. My man, Mike Miller, with the Harmony Street Sound. This is the man with the plan to make sure that you know everything about the music that's a part of our band.
You know, a lot of people don't realize that not only do you sing with the group, but, you know, you manage them and you do all the business, you know, as far as the Marcells are concerned. I just wanted to bring that out.
Yeah.
If somebody wanted to get in touch with the Marcells and they wanted to book the Marcells, how would they do that?
Yeah, just again, email me or themarcells.com gives all the information.
Okay, that'd be great. You know, it's like I said, the Marcells were a very, very important group in the genre. That's pretty important. And, of course, we talked about the fact that the business has changed. But, you know, it's good to see that the Marcells are still carrying the name, and it's all good. What would you say to people who have followed the Marcells all these years and are fans of the Marcells and are still turning out to see the Marcells in concert? What would you say to those people?
Thanks for letting us share your memories.
That's great, too. Walt, thank you so much for taking out time in your busy schedule to talk to us. And I think people have a little better of an idea as to Walt Maddox, the singer, the business manager, your hopes, your dreams, and what you've accomplished and what's going on with the Marcells at this point.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'd just like to say goodbye, and I want you to have a good night.
Thank you, Ian. Okay.
I appreciate it much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Is it yes or is it no? Should I stay up happy or should I go? If this is so, I'll be forever loving you. Like that.
sometimes think that you've had too much wine. If this is so, I'll be forever loving you. When you're near, everything is soft. When you're gone, I feel like I'm in need. When you smile, I feel so gay.
chimney tops.
And that's where you find me. Somewhere over the rainbow. Bluebirds fly.
Bluebirds fly.
If you feel it in here,
I'm sincere.
Nah, not that thing again. Sing Melancholy Baby.
All right, we will.
Melancholy baby.
Come to me, my melancholy baby. Come to me, my melancholy baby. Come to me, my melancholy baby.
Baby.
Come to me, my melancholy baby.
Come to me, my melancholy baby.
Cuddle up. And don't be blue.
Come to me, my melancholy baby. Oh.
All your fears are foolish fancies, maybe. You know, dear, that I'm in love with you.
Baby.
Every cloud must have a silver lining.
Come to me, my melancholy baby.
Wait until the sun. Shines through.
Come to me, my melancholy baby.
Smell my honey, dear. While I kiss away each tear. Or else I shall be melancholy too.
Gee, that's pretty. Sing it again.
Well, all right.
Come to me,
come to
my melancholy baby.
My melancholy
come
baby.
To me, my melancholy baby.
Why don't you cuddle up
baby.
And don't be blue? Melancholy baby.
Come to me, my melancholy baby. Come to me, my melancholy baby. Come to me, my melancholy baby.
Baby.
your phone, don't make her cry. You'll never miss your walk till you well run dry. Hold on. Somebody who can love all along
your bed that took me on a thrilling ride. In your arms I've reached the gates of heaven. Then your love,
then your love,
yes your love,
yes your love,
took me inside. But oh my darling, when you left, all my watchers disappeared. So all alone, with no love of my own, where are you tonight?
Why did you go?
Please come back. Give me back your love.
Give me back your love.
Let's fly back to that wonderland above.
To that wonderland above.
Come on, baby. Give me back your love.
Harmony Street.
Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street.